mindful, come out of the meditation, continue to maintain your mindfulness. Whatever movement activity, continue to be with it. Okay. We will now continue with our Dhamma sharing. We are at page 96. Understand how you get yourself entangled with life via not understanding the Four Noble Truths. That shows how important the Four Noble Truths is. The Four Noble Truths is essentially the essence of the Buddha's teaching. And the Buddha can summarize all of life, both mundane and supramundane, in just four beautiful truths. That's why it's the essence of his teaching. So you have to go through, we have dealt with it. The First Noble Truth talks about realities of life and existence. So the eight reality or the eight condition that can bring about suffering. And the most important one is to understand the final summary of what dukkha is. The Buddha summarized all of suffering as attachment to the five aggregates of form and mind, the two aspects. Then the Second Noble Truth explains the cause of arising of suffering, which is craving, conditioned by one's self-delusion and ignorance. Then there's the Third Noble Truth. Suffering need not be an enlightenment, the here and the now can be realized. Then the Fourth Noble Truth is very important. Not only the Buddha says suffering need not be, enlightenment the here and the now is possible. He even teaches you how to do it. He says there is a way out of suffering. If you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the end of all suffering. Okay, question 1.2. Brother, can you explain again what you meant by the Buddha was able to summarize all of life, both the mundane and supramundane, do just four simple but very beautiful noble truths, which is the essence of his teaching? And can you also explain which part is mundane and which part is supramundane? So this is a very good question. Then I replied, as stated above, the first noble truth of dukkha clearly explains all the eight realities of life and existence that cover all aspects of our mundane living and life experiences, ranging from birth, old age, sickness and death, to separation from our loved ones and prized possession, and to be with people whom we don't like, not able to get what one desires, or when things don't go your way, or follow your expectation, and the final summary of attachment to the five aggregates of form and mind, or what they call upadana khandas. Upadana is grasping, khandas is aggregate, as the cause of all suffering. The Buddha also cautioned living beings that if they do not develop the wisdom needed to free their mind before confronting this First Noble Truth reality of life and existence, then they will definitely be afflicted by it, and suffering will be the result. So this is very clear, the First Noble Truth. So this is the mundane aspect. Then the Second Noble Truth explains clearly the cause behind all suffering, so that living beings can develop the understanding not to be gullible anymore. After you understand what suffering is and the cause behind, you will know how to manage your life better, so that you need not have to suffer anymore, or suffer unnecessarily anymore. Then the Buddha proceeds to explain under the Third Noble Truth that suffering need not be if one has the Dhamma. And there is such a Noble Truth that explain or talk about the possibility of realizing Nibbana or the enlightenment in the here and the now, leading to the cessation of all suffering. So this enlightenment or Nibbana is the supramundane realization. Then after you become enlightened, you can live the noble life of an enlightened being. And this is a supramundane aspect of living. Then the Buddha explained how this enlightenment can be realized via proclaiming the fourth noble truth that states, there is a path leading to the cessation of all suffering, namely noble eightfold path of right view, right thought, right speech or right communication, right action, right living, right effort, right mindfulness, and right samadhi. Once this noble eightfold path has been cultivated, it can lead to the supramundane way of living life, the noble life of an enlightened being, following noble eightfold path. The entire noble eightfold path within the noble eightfold path, they are all so noble and relevant to life, and they cover all of life, both the mundane and the supramundane aspect. In order to live life, we must have the understanding of what is life. And to understand life, we must have the first power factor of right view or right understanding with regards to nature's law that governs life and existence, especially the three spiritual laws of karma niyama, citta niyama, and dhamma niyama. Then to live life, we have to use thought, we have to communicate via speech or right communication like email, etc. And we also need to act and work to live life. Hence the importance of having the second to fifth power factor of right thought leading to right speech or right communication, right action and right living cultivated. Then we will need the four right effort power factor to purify our action, speech and thought process, followed by right mindfulness to be heedful, to cultivate the four foundation of mindfulness. And finally, the last power factor of right samadhi to see things as they are, thereby developing the wisdom to become enlightened. This is also the reason why the Buddha gave the analogy of the handful of leaves at Kosambi to the monk to impress upon them the importance of understanding the Four Noble Truths, which is so essential to living the holy life. These Four Noble Truths and the Three Turnings are also the Buddha's first teaching under his first sermon, the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, which he expounded immediately after his enlightenment. This Dhamma cultivation is more or less a full-time job. That is, throughout your waking hour, accumulating into 24-hour heedfulness cultivation. That is, we need to confine our cultivation fully on the Dhamma when undergoing the training, which consists of hearing, reflection, contemplation, and inquiry into the Four Noble Truths, and heedful direct seeing into phenomena via our daily mindfulness in life itself. But full-time job here doesn't mean one must retire or give up one's job or career. One can cultivate even in the midst of life or working and living life via the daily mindfulness. And this type of heedfulness training, via the daily mindfulness and this type of heedfulness training. This one you better listen. I always advise devotee or kayamita as follow. See whether you understand or not. If you have to work, then work. Do you know what are the people who have to work? Why do you have to work? You need what? Money for survival, isn't it? So no choice lah. Your karma not so good. You cannot retire, understand? So you have to work, understand? But the second fellow is very miserable. What is it? He need to work. You know why he need to work? He don't need money actually. Very good. Keep him busy. Who say that? That's why he just retired. Because too much free time and they doesn't know how to retire. And then work lah. Because a lot of people ask me this question when I retire at the age of 40 plus, especially in my class. They say, hey, what you do after you retire? Because they cannot understand. No. Without the 9 to 5, they find it miserable. No. Very difficult to pass time. No. So I say, if there's a case, then you need to work. So go and work. La. If you already have the wisdom, and you don't have to or need to work, then retire or semi-retire to do the thing that you love to do or like to do. Isn't that better? Huh? You can have the good karma to retire or semi-retire to do what? To do the thing that you love to do or you want to do or like to do. Huh? Learn to live life and not to worry about life. This is very important. A lot of human beings don't understand this. They worry and worry and worry about life. To be heedful is to be ever mindful and constantly meditative to realize the Dhamma as taught by the Buddha. The most important meditation training is to cultivate the daily mindfulness. We are following this condition. Yeah, this is what my teacher taught me, Ajayantra. We choose aware of every bodily and mental action and movement within the present moment. He said that is the highest meditation. That is the real meditation. Okay, then next part, 2.1. Mental formation or sankhara or mental activity of mind means everything that your mind can do. Impermanent is a universal characteristic, prevalence to all phenomena. See clearly how phenomena come and how it goes, how they arise and pass away, their birth and death, their rise and fall, etc. All conditioned arising phenomena are impermanent because they are conditioned arising and they do not have a permanent unchanging entity of their own. Hence, they cannot be owned or held onto as the I and the me. Our fundamental nature is the oneness nature or the Buddha nature or the true nature. Saying by the most venerable master, Quang Ching Lao He Sang, I think we have gone through, Kua Chi Sing Pu Ke De, the mind of the past cannot be grasped onto because it's already gone, not a reality. Wei Lai Sing Ye Pu Ke De. The mind of the future also cannot be grasped onto because it has yet to come, also not a reality. Then the third one is a 现在心也不可得, means the mind of the moment is the only reality and the highest in life. But to transcend life, we have to transcend even the moment, which is still within the field of thought, hence impermanent. That's why Nirvana is cessation of form and mind. Moment to moment, life passes by. What are you doing? Contemplate, reflect, check. Are you truly living or are you too busy thinking, planning and worrying about life? So much so you totally miss out on life. That is, you never get to truly live life. To be with the moment in silent awareness within, to feel, to experience the reality of the moment, including all of its wonders and beauties of life. That is to live life. Then meditation, part 3, the question number 1. What is the difference between contemplation and thinking? So this one I earlier explained before, so I read again, you listen. To contemplate on the Dhamma spoken by the Buddha is to reflect and inquire deep into the proclamation of truth that he has given under his first turning of the Four Noble Truths. This contemplative wisdom called Chintamaya Panya is part of the second turning of the Four Noble Truths wisdom. To develop this contemplation, one must have a calm and composed mind with the spiritual faculty of Sadha, Virya, Sati and Samadhi in its creative state to inquire and reflect deeply into its second turning hidden meaning. Reflection and contemplation is a form of inquiry, investigation, with the creative mind in sati or mindfulness. There is some form of slight creative thinking but not active thinking to bring about a better understanding of what has been heard under the first turning, followed by the assimilation of it to stabilize one's understanding. Just like a talented musician or a talented person, when are they most creative? When they are in a very quiet or tranquil setting, very conducive setting, to reflect and contemplate on their talent. Their mind is usually very quiet, calm, and rather creative at that time. And that is the reason why they can have the talent to create such beautiful music. Reflect on what you have heard, taught to you, or read about. Listen with attentiveness and a calm mind. After that, reflect and contemplate with a calm mind, with very little or no thought. Reflection is like inquiring, Reflection is like inquiring and contemplation. Reflection is like inquiring and contemplate. Contemplating. Reflection is like inquiring and contemplating. Its purpose is to stabilize what one understands. So when you contemplate and reflect, you get deeper understanding. But when you contemplate and reflect, you need something to trigger off. Understand? You don't go and think. You just throw up the inquiry. Why did the Buddha say that? Do you understand? Like birth is suffering. Why did the Buddha say that? This is the inquiry. So this one will drive your mindfulness to recollect the birth process where you have gone through life. Then as you recollect, you are very mindful of what happened in life. Your last time you are not mindful. Then suddenly you hit a peg. Oh, no wonder the Buddha say birth is suffering. Especially lady. Or if you are observant as a husband or as a man, you can also read our own books or hear what people tell you. They have morning sickness, they vomit. Then after that, they have all the other complications that come with birth. And the real birth is painful. Even with medical science, it's not easy. Sometimes they have to really use all their available energy to push. And you have seen shows and the cry, very, very severe. But mother, because of their love for their baby, they can do it, they can endure. Then with birth come what? Old age, sickness and death. That's why birth is dukkha. With birth, you cannot escape. You will experience old age, sickness and death. Then the other reality, if you live long enough. So these are all very straightforward. Then we go on. Reflection and contemplation is a form of inquiry or investigation with the creative mind in sati. Oh, I have gone through this. When you are in a very tranquil and all these are finished. Reflection is like inquiring and contemplating its purpose. Inquiring and contemplating. Its purpose is to stabilize what one understands. Assimilating the Dhamma is analogous to assimilating the food. That is, like assimilating and absorbing the nutrient after eating the food. So when you reflect and contemplate through your recollection, which is part of your memory, then when you mindfully contemplate and reflect, you can recollect what happened during birth. Then when you get sick, that's why the Buddha under the second turning, this noble truth or dukkha is to be understood. So you don't reflect and contemplate, you cannot understand. And to reflect and contemplate, you have to inquire. You need something to trigger off. inquiring is not thinking. When this word come out, let's say birth is suffering, or old age sickness and death is suffering. So the inquiry, why did the Buddha say that, will trigger of the mind to recollect through memory what happened when you get old, what happened when you get sick, what happened when death occurred. Then through that, because you are mindfully recollecting, then when you hit a patch where it ties in with what you are reflecting and contemplating, then suddenly you understand. Then as you continue to reflect and contemplate, that creative thinking make you understand deeper. That's how you assimilate the understanding. Then you stabilize it. So that the next time you encounter all this, you are conscious, you are aware, you have better understanding. Then you appreciate life. You appreciate why the Buddha say all this is suffering. And then you can relate to the teaching. That's how you contemplate. Okay, next chapter. 1.1. There were no short notes for last week's Heart Sutta. So we will use the short note of last Tuesday's Surangama Sutta. This one is Leng Yan Jing. It's a Mahayana Sutta, which is very good. Surangama Sutta or Leng Yan Jing is important because without it, the Mara will create havoc. According to Master Xuan Hua, this sutta will be the first sutta to disappear during Dhamma ending age. If this sutta is around, Mara will find it very difficult to delude the cultivator. This sutta explains clearly the danger of the 50 deviant samadhi, 五十阴魔, that can trap the cultivator. If they deludedly grasp onto any of them, the Surangama Sutta also explains how the living being comes into this world of existence via the four stages of manifestation originating from the source, which I have drawn the diagram for you. These four stages of manifestation are clearly explained in the notes to be given out at the next Tuesday class. So that time all those notes were given out, but I have put them in the Heart Sutta notes. From the source comes the true mind in pure awareness before the knowing. Man, because of basic ignorance, caused since time without beginning by the first thought of ignorance, which screened the true mind. That's why the first thought that come out with ignorance, the first thought of ignorance, that screened the true mind, became subject to birth and death. Thus, both permanent and impermanent unite to transform the true mind into alaya vijnanam, or store consciousness, which is the root of samsara. This alaya consciousness has three characteristics. A karmic, which is basic ignorance resulting from self-evidencing. Then a changing or condition arising one. That one is to show you that is a condition arising one. Which turns fundamental wisdom into false perception. That's why all your perception before you have wisdom, they are all defective, false perception. And this false perception is the root of the first seven consciousness. And its expression in appearances or form. Because of basic ignorance, the spiritual bright and nirvanic absolute void was changed into doubt and deluded emptiness. This is what they call primordial darkness. Primordial, the early stage. Hence, Manjusri said, thus in delusion, there appear one-sided emptiness, which is the primordial darkness. Within this doubt emptiness, ignorance gradually crystallized and turn into illusionary form, made of the four elements, resulting in an imaginary world created within the void. When false perception confronted external form, a very small portion of this form was gradually grasped at as being self-possessed and being supported by wrong perception. Then the form and mind unite and grasp at the dim little form as the ego, thereby creating the living being make up of the five aggregates of form and mind. Hence, Manjushri continue, steadying itself, the thinking process, via consciousness, make the continent, and the illusionary knower becomes the living being. Then via delusion and ignorance, the living being with the mundane mind or samsaric mind, which is the five mental aggregate of form and mind, come to be via karmic conditioning. And this was then grasped at, hence the self-delusion or sakkayaditti. This was the origin of a living being. Ever since then, this living being grasps at the condition arising five aggregate of form and mind, as the ego, as the I and the me. So how then can one now recognize its boundless true mind before the stirring? That is basically humanity's problem. Where you forgot that you came from the source, your boundless oneness nature, the true nature. Then comes the external phenomenal world, or world of form or consciousness created by the mundane mind, via its condition arising thought and consciousness. So our meditation is to develop the wisdom to understand all this, then retrospectively to return the entire external phenomenal world back to consciousness within the mundane mind. Then silence that mundane mind, steal the mundane mind to connect back to our true mind before returning to the source via the complete cessation of form and mind, means realization of Nibbana. So this is how you meditate. Without the silent mind, the true mind, the pure awareness, you cannot meditate. Because when this one is not there, means you are with the mundane mind, you are lost in thought. You are preoccupied with the mundane mind, and you believe that it's real, that is what you are. You see the point or not? Huh? Do you see the point? How you share? Okay. Everything you come to know and perceive is manifested through what? Your mundane mind. Your mind is a forerunner. Mind is chief. From mind, everything arises. So this one very clear. Everything you come to know and perceive is manifested through mind. So mind make a day. And a condition arising phenomena of world. Sorry. And it is just a condition arising phenomenal world of consciousness. Before mind arise, there was nothing. So everything come about after mind has arisen. We are mental consciousness. So how real can mental consciousness be? It's just an image there. The constant arising and passing away from moment to moment of mental images. Hence, its impermanent characteristic. Because it's impermanent, it's empty. It's anatta nature. If you can't see all this, if you can't understand all this via wisdom, then you will grasp and cling onto it. Yeah? Then all these mental manifestations, you will cling very strongly, thinking that they are real. This is delusion. And it can be so powerful as to cause you a lot of suffering. That's why you experience sorrow, lamentation, fear, worry, anxiety, etc. When you train your mind to be silent, ever mindful and heedful, then you will be able to see things as they are, thereby developing the wisdom and understanding to enable you to free and liberate your mind so that you need not suffer anymore. Then you will be able to connect to the true mind and live from there. It is this true mind in pure awareness that can see things as they are to realize the enlightenment in the here and the now. When wisdom stabilizes, the mundane mind will realize itself and cease to be, leading to the realization of Nibbana. Nibbana is complete cessation of form and mind, even the pure awareness also will cease. And it cannot be talked about because it is the unconditioned and beyond the form and mind. The Mahayana sixth consciousness is the Theravada Sanya, aggregate of mind, which is usually translated as the mental perception or cognition. It also includes the conception and discerning aspect of the mundane mind, but the key meaning is perception or cognition. The first five types of consciousness are seeing consciousness, hearing consciousness, smell, tactile, and tasting consciousness. And the 6, 7, 8 consciousness of the Mahayana tradition are within the mental consciousness that arise upon contact of mind with its respective sense organ and sense data. The mundane mind or the false thinking mind is not your true mind because it's conditioned arising. There is not a permanent unchanging entity. It has no nature of its own. Whereas Nirvana is totally different because it's the unconditioned. Once the mundane mind completely ceases, then the true mind will manifest, leading upstream to the realization of the oneness nature or the Buddha nature, which is the enlightenment, Nibbana. Mundane mind is the deluded, heedless thinking mind, capable of false perception, of cognition via memory, knowledge, and false thinking. And they are all karmically related. Sankara and Sanya are very active within. It constantly clings and grabs onto some sense data. Whereas the true mind is the silent, heedful mind, pure and clear, profound and bright. It can be aware of sense data, thought, and it can also see things as they are. The mind of the enlightened one is connected to their true mind with wisdom. It is the essence of mind, the unconditioned mind. So all these are very clear. Then part 2, 2.1, Sanya. Sanya brings the external form into the mind. So this one we already gone through, via mental perception. And it is also called the sixth consciousness. This external form then becomes the mental form or sense data for the mind to arise mental consciousness, because mind is also an organ. Then the seventh consciousness, which is Sankara, is likened to the mental organ, and upon contact within the mind via the mental activity or thinking, trigger of the eighth consciousness. So Alaya, the eighth consciousness, they call it the Alaya or storehouse consciousness, which is the summation of all of your conscious moment. So the word is just another division or division set up by the Mahayana tradition. That's why they got this, what they call Alaya consciousness or storehouse consciousness. Means everything that you arise through every segment of your form and mind, the summation of it become your Alaya consciousness, the storehouse consciousness. Actually, that is what we mean by the summation of all your moment-to-moment type of mental intention or consciousness, and that one become your karmic nature. So it's nothing special. It's just a concept, a division. So a lot of people, when they don't understand, they thought, wow, Mahayana, fantastic. Why? They say, we all, under Theravada, only got what? Mano and Chitta, thought, one consciousness only. What, they got eight? Oh. So you become very, very impressed. But it's a subdivision. So you think eight means very complicated. The first five is what? The first five consciousness is what? Based on your senses, your seeing consciousness, your hearing consciousness, your smell, your tongue, which taste, and tactile. This five is already in your teaching. But the Buddha didn't subdivide into five. He said these are consciousness that arise upon contact of mind with the sense basis. That's why you didn't know you also got five consciousness. Then the mind can also become conscious, mental consciousness. And that is your sixth consciousness. And how does it arise? Because you bring the external form from outside. Do you understand? So that sanya bring in the external form. So within the mental form, the Buddha say you got your four aggregate of feeling, perception, activity of mind, or sankhara, and consciousness. Then the mental form come in, it becomes the second aspect of the five aggregate of form and mind. And that is your thought. That's why your sixth consciousness is your mental consciousness, your thought. Then they say got seven. Oh, then where to find number seven? He said your mind is also an organ, understand? If your mind is also an organ, you need sense data. What is the sense data for your mind? Yeah? Your mental sense data. Yeah? Through perception you bring in there. Correct or not? Yeah? So the sense data that come in through perception, yeah? Then how did the mind make contact? You think, isn't it? So thinking is that sankhara, isn't it? Correct or not? So that one become like an organ to trigger of consciousness, understand or not? So it's just like that. And they call that the seven consciousness. Because after contact, the seven consciousness created the eight consciousness. Understand? The mental consciousness, they call it the eight consciousness. It's actually same, but because they go to mind as an organ, then they add these two inside. It's nothing special, understand? Not? But you don't understand, Mahayana. That's why I say Theravada got the teaching, but you don't understand. And you think Mahayana, huh? Then some people think the opposite, no. They are not impressed, no. They say, not taught by the Buddha. Buddha never described got eight types of consciousness. They say they checked Tipitaka already, don't have. So, how? Sutta also never talk about it. So, that's how you end up arguing, but you don't understand. When you understand, you use the Theravada understanding, you can explain the Mahayana understanding. There is no difference. That's why I say you must see it in your own form of mind. You must have mindfulness to understand all this. Now you understand? So that you are not gullible like last time. When you are gullible, you go and argue, understand? Where you believe what people say, due to what? Because it appears very logical, understand? Logical means what? They say sutta don't have all. Then you have been hearing Dhamma talk. We don't have eight consciousness. We only got one. Sense door consciousness. Because you yourself don't understand how they divide, understand now? So a lot of these things, you shouldn't be gullible. Then some people come very impressed. You better go and study Mahayana. Why? They got eight consciousness. We all got one only, you know. Then after that, some gullible one come and tell you. They got all the great beings, you know. They got Kuan Yin, they got Manjushri, they got what? Everything. You all only Sakyamuni Buddha, you know. So, what you think? You greedy, you want to go Mahayana. Then you complain. Why we all Theravada only Sakyamuni? But you never understand what Sakyamuni Buddha teach you. You know Sakyamuni Buddha teach you much, much more deeper than Mahayana. Why? He teach you to do what? Take. Every day you do what? Take what? Not precept lah. You take refuge. Refuge in what? Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And that Buddha is not Sakyamuni alone. All Buddha, understand? Including all the Mahayana one. All the Mahayana one. And you say your teaching don't have one only. You go and believe what people tell you. That refuge is refuge safe because all Sammasambuddha, someone not existing one, no. Not the one that passed away, no. Past, present, and future, no. Not check come one also included. You don't know how great your refuge is. You see the point or not? Then what is Dhamma? Dhamma is all truth, understand or not? Whatever that is the reality, the truth. That's why his teaching is Buddha Dhamma. The truth that can awaken you and make you enlightened. That is the Dhamma. So whichever being that has the teaching, including Heart Sutta, Diamond Sutta, what type of Sutta, is part of the refuge you take. Then all the enlightened disciples of the Buddha, they are all these great beings, understand or not? Not only limited to Mahayana or Zen Buddhism. All beings. That's why you don't know how extensive your refuge are. You just like parrot, Bedang Saranang Gacchami, Dhammang Saranang Gacchami, Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. What is the Buddha, what is the Dhamma, what is the Sangha, also don't know. And what is the meaning, also don't know. So if you like that, difficult to get the faith and difficult to get the Dhamma. You must understand what you chant. Then when you chant, Bedang Saranang Gacchami, means what? You understand, I go to all the Sammasambuddha, past, present, and future, for refuge. Then your faith very strong. Then you have all these great beings for you to create affinity. Because you take refuge in them. They're all of truth, Dhamma. Also, you go to them. That's why when I chant, my heart open up during the early day. When I say, Bedang Saranang Gacchami, my heart really go for refuge in the Buddha. And there is great faith and respect for the Buddha. Then only that faith go in, understand not? Then when you chant, Dhammang Saranang Gacchami, means to all the truth, all the Dhamma, I go for refuge. Then the last one is, Sanghang Saranang Gacchami, to all the enlightened beings of the Buddha, I go for refuge. Then repeat, Dutiyampi Bedang Saranang Gacchami, from the heart, come out. Then only very effective. Otherwise, it's like parroting without understanding, not sure, don't have the faith. Then you do, people ask you, what you do? I take refuge in what? You know how to quote Buddha Dhamma Sangha. What is the Buddha? Don't know. What is the Dhamma? Don't know. Because the salutation to the Buddha Dhamma Sangha, you only chant, you don't know the meaning. That's why you cannot learn if you just do that. You have to really go and find out what are the deep meaning. And then when you understand, because you take refuge in these three things, if you don't even know what they are, you take refuge, got no meaning in that. Like you make aspiration to meet the Buddha, but you don't recognize the Buddha. You also make aspiration to have affinity with the Dhamma, but you don't recognize what is the real Dhamma. That's why you must understand their essence. That's why you pay homage or salutation to all these triple gems and you take refuge. Means you really understand what these things are. Then it is only real refuge. Eh? Now understand. Why you must repeat three times? Huh? Because the Buddha scared you not serious, understand or not? That's why he say everything three times. But you parrot Bedang Saranang Gacchami, like quickly you want to finish all. Then Dutiyambi Bedang Saranang Gacchami, especially you do at home, I tell you. Because Brother Teo say, start chanting first. Very quickly, we want to go office. So 15 minutes, shorten to 5 minutes. Like that, no use, understand? Like that, myself don't do, just go, mindfully, better. When you really want to do, you commit yourself, then you allow time, wake up earlier, don't stay up so late. Then if your body is healthy, no problem. Sleep late, also wake up early, like in the retreat. At home, you sleep until what time? In the retreat, exactly 5 o'clock, then automatic alarm bell. That's why I no need to look at my watch or my handphone. The first one is 5 o'clock. Second one is 5:15. Then after that, I get ready to wake up. Then the third one is slightly before 5:30. Then I got enough time because I do things very simple, mindful. That's why every time I come, not only on time, most of the time I'm early. unless I got something. So this is how you should prepare yourself, develop the understanding, so that all this retreat that you come, the Dhamma classes that you attend, become meaningful, become fruitful. And once you do it correctly, you progress like anything. Your field of merit is immeasurable without you understanding what you are doing. That's why I must have faith, must be sincere. Then learn genuinely, diligently, develop the understanding, and you become very different. Okay, the next one. The four foundations of mindfulness. This one is very useful. I go through the four foundations. We have that time people don't understand. Then there is one book which is very good. The last chapter of the Satipatthana Sutta, the yellow book. You must get hold of that book. That book, the whole 3 hours I explain. I summarize all of Satipatthana, where I finish of the that sharing on the four foundations of mindfulness. So we went through because they want to understand. So I think I delivered for quite long. Then when we reached the last chapter before we start this recent Six Patriarch Platform Sutta, I think, I did a summary of the whole thing. And it was very beautiful. That transcript book is very good. I think I brought it there. Somebody must have taken it also. So those who don't have, you go to the website and download. Or you come to my house, I can give you. Even Sui An Mi Fong there should have. Then Padmasuri, Brother Tung also they have. Or you go to any other Tuesday class, Thursday class, or Sunday class, we can give it to you. Okay, first foundation of mindfulness, Kaya Nupassana, starts with, there are 6 categories of practices. The first thing is Anapanasati. So Anapanasati here explained clearly, mindfulness of in and out breath, that's why there is no focusing, no concentration, no noting, nothing, just aware. So Anapanasati is to train the mind to be in sati, to develop heedfulness finally. That is the purpose, not what you think. Not when you are doing Anapanasati, you are meditating. No, that is to train the mind to be in sati, then stabilize it to be ever mindful. Then after that, next category of practice is what? Once you are mindful, you stabilize it and you become heedful, then cultivate mindfulness of the four postures. Standing, aware. Sitting, aware. Walking, aware. Lying down, aware. That's why when you lie down to sleep, you are aware. Then when you wake up, you are aware of your posture. Then when you come out, how you turn, how you move, that one is the third category. Then after that, when you sit on the bed, before you stand up, you are aware of the posture. Then when you stand up, you're aware of all the movement. Then when you walk, again the posture come in. You're fully aware. That's how you do it. Then this, was it this morning or yesterday? Yesterday, I explained about the going to the toilet one. This morning, is it? This morning. After that, you do your business. Answer nature's call. After that, what you do? You're supposed to brush your teeth, isn't it? You know how to brush or not? You know how you brush your teeth? You can describe to me or not? You describe to me, I will know whether you're mindful or not. You know what most people do? You wake up, think, got any assignment, office, got what? You totally don't know what you are doing. Then sometimes you put the wrong paste, no, not toothpaste, no. You also don't know, put in your mouth and brush. Because you are thinking. And as you do that, you think. And there is one part that I want you to learn. Because this one I seldom teach. Because my wife got an experience, that after that she asked me, then I recall this part. You see, when you are mindful, you are so aware, you become so different. No? Well, you don't think anymore. And like I said, when you look at this microphone, if you look with the word and the concept, what happened? You are not looking at it, isn't it? So I tell you, when you are brushing your teeth, normally what you do? What you do? You have to go in front of the basin, isn't it? Correct or not? Correct or not? You don't brush your teeth in front of the basin in your toilet. You brush where? Roadside. Or your garden tap. You go retreat maybe. So at home, you should go to your basin. Are you aware? Then when you saw the toothpaste, are you aware? Then when your hand moved to take the toothpaste, are you aware? Before that, when your hand moved to take the toothbrush, are you aware? You assume no. Sometimes that toothbrush got dirty thing inside there also, you don't know. But you never look at it. Understand? Then when you brush, not so good. Look for new one. But you never check, understand? Why it become like that? But when you brush, you use your gulat, just push, understand? You're not supposed to do it. You're supposed to remove whatever that's stuck to your tooth, understand? That's why gently but mindfully. But what you all do is, you prove me wrong or you tell me whether this is true or not. But you are not mindful. Even as you brush, how your toothbrush went in, your hand movement, action, all you are not aware. What are you doing? What are you doing? Thinking. Understand not? After that late, how? What I have to do? I forgot. I borrowed this. I promised to return. I didn't return. Your thought is all. Understand not? Then the next thing you do is what? You push too hard, the gum kena. Understand not? Then sometimes it went out of your mouth. Then all the what? The foam. That's what you did. Then you quickly, how you on the tap also doesn't know. How your hand go and collect water also you don't know. Finish. That's what you do. And most of the time, when I say mindful, then you say, yeah, brother, you say mindful. You know how you do mindfulness? At least there is an improvement. You know what you do? You take the toothbrush. You think you're mindful, no? You are using the word, understand? The concept. You never observe. You are never aware of it. You just say, yeah, I'm mindful. You note with the thought, understand? Your hand movement also, your awareness not with it. Yeah, that toothbrush look like what also you don't know. You only know there is a toothbrush. You assume that it is. Then what happened? You put the toothpaste. Let's say you don't think so much. You open the cap, then you press it out. Then how your hand use that toothbrush to take the toothpaste, are you aware? You are never aware of all this. Then how all these things ready, you're still thinking. Then after that, you brush. But when you brush, you realize not enough water. So you put on the running tap there to make it wet. Then you brush. And when you brush, you know what you doing. Your idea and concept and the word are still there, no? You still imagine that toothbrush, you know? Understand? Or then teeth. All these words are there, you know? Understand? Do you realize that or not? You know, after I became mindful, brushing teeth becomes so different, you know? I was so mindful, then I realized one thing, you know? Whatever my mundane mind that is conscious, when I don't label it, there is no word on. Everything is just aware. That's why this mundane mind don't become like lost in thought, create all the words, the concept. That's how it gives you problem. Then when it creates the word, this is what you perceive through your mundane mind. Understand not? Like this table. How do you know it's a table? Through memory, through perception, isn't it? But do you really know this table? Did you really feel this table? You can't, is it? You know why? Yeah, you can't touch it, is it? But at least when you touch, you can feel this table. At least there is some reality there. You understand not? Whatever that your mind cannot touch or cannot have any awareness of, it's not real. Understand not? It's condition arising, image only, created by your mundane mind. So see that. That's why when I am mindful and do all this, when the brushing, the image of that toothbrush is not there, understand? You know why? The image of that tooth and the toothpaste all not there. What is there? The sensation, understand? The sensation, understand? But that is more tangible, more real. At least my mind feel that, understand? So that is the only reality. The rest are not reality. That's why the Heart Sutta say form is emptiness. Emptiness is form, not really what you think. How you come to know the form? Through your mental perception, through the images. And when your mind is not there to perceive, they don't exist. That's why they are unreal. They don't really exist. Then your mind becomes so simple, understand? Whatever cannot feel, not real. Then when I take my bowel sim, when I close my eye, like nothing exists. Just my mind sensing thing. Even when the shower, the water go, it's just aware that there is this movement. No word, nothing. And you know what happened to my mind after that? My teacher also got a shock. Then he told me, Theo, do you know, your mindfulness has reached a level where normal monk also cannot do. Because after that I came down, I was so mindful throughout the day and aware. And I realized everything that mind create is all not real. Whatever that my mind can come into contact with, at least that one is more tangible and more genuine. You understand? That's why all the form delusion no more have got no power over my understanding. Then after that, the shocking thing is, you know what happened? That time I got one Toyota Light East to fetch monk one, you remember? I came down from my house. Then I look outside, I saw that Toyota Light East. Then because I was so mindful, the moment I really aware, that whole Toyota Light East image disappear. How can it disappear? Solid thing, isn't it? But really disappear from my perception, not there. That is the deeper meaning of Heart Sutta. Form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. Then when it happened, I thought could be hallucination or what, isn't it? Could be my consciousness don't know what happened, isn't it? So I checked. I mindfully checked. You know what happened or not? I look across the road to my neighbors because it is a end lot with the extra land. There was a tree there. When I was mindful, aware, pop, that tree gone also. But the tree was always there. My Toyota Light is also always there. Then what happened? Because my mindfulness was such that it can cut off the perception. That one is the mundane mind. Yeah, when it completely with the true mind, it just aware, nothing inside there. And that vibration that created that image is certain vibration, like your hearing. You go beyond that, the hearing you cannot hear. We are limited by your senses. Because that mindfulness, with that type of vibration, when it see, disappear. But after it happened, the next moment, normal seeing appear again. That's why, 看山是山, 看山不是山. Then finally come back again, 看山又是山. That is how it can happen. That's why when you are mindful, power of mindfulness, your mind is completely different. You are totally not the normal type of human being. And this is just to develop wisdom, understand not? Don't think that it is psychic, understand? Nothing to do with psychic. I don't know magic. I cannot make the car disappear. But I saw the perception showing me that form is what the mundane mind perceive. Then when you go beyond, it disappears. That's why form is emptiness. Emptiness. Then you know that these are all mind-made. When the mind no more, all this cease. That's how the wisdom become very different, penetrative. Can follow that? This one don't answer lah, because cannot. But at least concept wise, preliminary understanding, yes, this is possible. Okay, yeah, we move on. Okay. After four posture, we go on to sati sampajana, the third category of practice. Then move on to cultivate sati sampajana, means mindfulness with clear comprehension of all the connecting activity or movement between the four posture. That is daily mindfulness of all action or movement in the present moment. To develop the initial wisdom or insight into the three universal characteristics of nature. Four types of clear comprehension. Clear comprehension of sincerity of purpose, we have gone through. Domain of meditation, suitability or reality of the in the here and the now. And lastly, non-delusion. Then only you cultivate mindfulness of the four elements. You remember that day somebody asked. Before your initial wisdom, you do the four elements, not effective, not much use. Then what is the next one? Mindfulness of the 32 parts that constitute the physical body to understand its condition arising. So this one is like the block cut analogy. But here I didn't describe it because I mentioned it. So condition arising nature of all the parts coming together to perform the function of a human being and to realize your physical body, the 32 part, is not what you think, understand? That's why beneath the skin, you look like Hong Li Hong, very handsome, the pretty girl, young and all that. That is beneath the skin, no? When you go in, below the skin, what do you see? Your phlegm, your feces, your urine, all your pulse. What in your nose one, what? Gola. Or in your ear one, gola. All these are not really so appealing, isn't it? Then all the things that you discharge, understand not? Your sweat, your bodily smell and all those things. Then you look inside, your intestine, you think very clean. There's all this part, your skull. Why you look at skeleton, you scared? You don't want to go in. You scared got ghosts. Correct or not? We are dying already, skeleton. That's why your perception is all affected by your views, opinion, memory, and your culture, your belief system. That's why when you contemplate the 32 part, the main purpose is to tell you your body is not what you think. Don't be deceived by the appearances. Surface appearances. Go below the skin. It's different. That's why Shenhua called this body what now? Chou Pinang. You know what is that? Pinang is what? Skin bag. Dirty skin bag. When you use this word, you realize, oh, you really are inside like that one. Then why go and get attracted to all this? But this is not ask you not to appreciate beautiful thing and pretty thing. Not attached only, understand? Because it's a consciousness. If there is condition for it to arise, when you know how to see, when you know how to be aware and observe, pretty, not pretty, dead, also very beautiful. Because these are nature's reality. That's why the pristine nature of every phenomenon, of everything that arises, they are very beautiful. Because you see it with the pristine mind, everything is new, everything is so pristine. It has its characteristic. It has its nature. It's so beautiful. But when you discriminate, then you got this type of discrimination. You arise the choice, like, dislike, pleasant. That's why you got a lot of this funny thing going on in your brain, in your mundane mind. That's why you got no time to be aware. Understand? You are too busy thinking. Then reacting, stirring, creating all this magic inside your mundane mind. That's why you hardly mindful, you hardly aware. And you don't understand many things. So hopefully with this sharing, it can let you understand. So the 32 part, the key understanding is, the Buddha's understanding is, to show you that it's not what you think. Then it becomes a body because of what? When the 32 parts come together and work perfectly, like the car functioning, then you can command, you can control. But doesn't mean you, it's you, like the car. You can drive, you can decide to go fast, slow, turn around or whatever. Whatever that is designed for, you can maneuver it, means under your control. But doesn't mean you own it. You are the driver, the car is the car. So this physical body is the same. Ability to command and control doesn't mean it's you, like the car. If all the parts are not in order, or any other part not in order, or even without petrol, without wheel, Formula One driver also cannot drive. Understand? Then you see, yeah, the car is the car, the driver is the driver. So the driver that drives this physical body of yours is what? The mundane mind, the consciousness. Let's see clearly. Then when there is paralysis, that's why this body doesn't follow the command of the mind. The mind wants to stand, the body cannot stand. Understand? Not? So all this, when you reflect, contemplate, you develop the understanding of what the Buddha is trying to tell you. These are all conditions arising. When condition is there, they exist, they arise. Condition cease to be, it cease to be. And the universal characteristic is just this. That's why Sariputta, the moment you hear, whatever there is of the condition to arise, will arise. Then whatever that arise, there are causes and conditions behind. Straight away, he becomes a Sotapanna. Because he knows everything is like that, dependent on originating, condition arising, impermanent, non-self, including his body, form and mind. This is how you can awaken. But you take the word literally, and you don't have the wisdom, you don't contemplate, you don't go into it, you don't know how to bring about the understanding. That's why those who are wise, they hear one stanza, they awaken. Like Hui Ning, the mind must have no dwelling. Straight away, he awakened. And that one is not easy, I tell you. That one, compared to Sariputta, is a lot more difficult. That's why those that become Sotapannan is quite easy. So with this understanding, hopefully, you understand what these practices are. Then finally, to make sure you understand, what the Buddha is trying to tell you is the sixth category of practice. What do you do? Finally, to contemplate the... nine stages of 7-3 decomposition of this physical body after it is devoid of consciousness. Devoid of consciousness means what? The consciousness separate. That's why you say die. Then, after they... Last time they cannot, they don't have this facility like burial ground or crematory and all those things. Last time you had to do yourself. So you want the easy way out. Just throw them into the channel ground where all the dead bodies are there. Then you know what happened. The four elements disperse. Then after that, the stray dog come, the eagle or the whatever bird come. Then and all those things. Then after that, finally, become what? The blood, the liquid, all gone, the element. First, the earth element. Then the liquid element, the wind element. So when your consciousness gone, there is no breathing, there is no pulse of life, the wind element gone. After the wind element gone, what is the next one? The solidity. Understand? The earth element start to melt down. Then the liquid element flow out. Understand? That's why finally only left with the bone and the dry up thing. Then, if you keep long enough, what happens? It deteriorates again and become powder. Then the wind blow. Where are you? Where are you? Nothing is there. That's why you come nothing, you go also nothing. Whatever that is earth, return to earth. You understand? From nature it comes, to nature it returns. So these four elements, when they disperse, condition not there, that's why it goes back to its elements. That's it. When the four elements disperse, your human physical form is gone. There is no more condition to sustain it. This is to allow you to understand that they are all dependent, originating, condition arising. Then when it's devoid of consciousness, it's not what you think. So pretty, so handsome, understand now? So youthful and all those things. When the consciousness leaves, it cannot sustain itself, there is no more growth hormone, then everything deteriorates. Oh, lunchtime already, yeah? Okay. So at least we finish, yeah? The first foundation. Okay, the second foundation, we come back, we continue. Huh? So you take your lunch break. Huh? Then pay respect, then you can have your lunch break. Huh? Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay. Ah, I got announcement. Wait. Huh?